Thank you. My name's Charlotte, and I'm a grateful recovering addict.
Hi, Charlotte.
Thanks to the committee for asking me to share, and thank you everyone for being here and helping me stay clean today, and thanks to my higher power for removing some of the fear to enable me to sit here and share my experience, strength and hope with a room full of people that I don't know very well. Because to be honest, sharing for me is my worst nightmare. The longer I stay clean, the worse it gets. It's not a natural state for me to even talk about my feelings, let alone share my feelings. But really, it's about carrying the message and freely giving away what was given to me and enabled me to get clean, to stay clean, and to restore me to sanity. So I can kind of put my fear to one side and try and sit here and hopefully carry a message to somebody. And if you don't identify with me, then keep coming back. Right. Okay, so I am an addict. I qualify. I love drugs. That's the reason I'm sitting here. I'm not sitting here because I don't love drugs, but I just cannot use them successfully. I've used every drug there is. I've tried every way and means of using more, getting more, substituting, controlling, drinking, smoking dope, smoking crack on a Sunday, everything, and it didn't work. So that's why I'm sitting here on a Friday night, and that is why I keep coming back to meetings, you know, so that I don't go back to the hell that I came from. I started using when I was 13 years old. My parents are alcoholics, and they got divorced when I was 8 years old. I had a really happy childhood, and they got divorced. And I pretty much got left to my own devices. What was a very happy family home turned into neglect, abandonment. My parents said, "We don't want you, you know, we wish we'd never have had you. You know, can't you just go away and shut up? You know, we don't care what you do, do whatever you want." You know, so 11 and 12, I was down in the blues clubs in St. Paul's. I'm from Bristol. I started to drink. I used to go out all night, every night, 7 days a week from when I was 12 years old. My parents didn't care where I was, and I was having a great time. You know, I was very unhappy at home, and I started smoking dope. And I don't know why I used drugs. Like, you know, I could say that there's something missing in my personality, so that when I picked up, I felt like I was a whole person. I felt like I could communicate with other people. I felt like I could laugh. I felt like I could tell jokes. I was the most popular person in the room, you know, and all the problems seemed to go away. But very quickly, as I progressed through drugs, each one stopped working for me. Cannabis stopped working for me. Speed stopped working for me. You know, I was addicted to cocaine when I was 15 years old. They just stopped working for me. Drink stopped working for me. But I never, because I come from an alcoholic family, my using was never a problem because I kind of thought it was normal. In my family home, you know, my parents drank to excess, all their friends drank to excess. Their whole life was centered around the pub, you know, and using drugs and house parties. And I thought that was kind of normal. I thought that's what people kind of did. But on the other side of things, I'd always loved school. Because school for me represented structure, it represented somewhere kind of quiet that I could go away from my family home, and I've always been quite intelligent, very stupid, but intelligent at the same time, you know, like kind of no common sense. And I found myself when I was 18 years old, I'd been accepted to university, and I remember thinking, how on earth did that happen? You know, I was going out every night of the week. I was off my head. I did my exams on LSD. You know, life was a party. You know, drugs hadn't become unmanageable for me. Well, I was totally unmanageable, but they hadn't become a problem to me at that point. And I remember going to university and sitting in this room and for the first time thinking, how am I not going to use? What am I going to do today? You know, and I, you know, I swapped my drug use for drinking. And at 18 years old, I was drinking a bottle of vodka a day or a bottle of gin. And I would black out and I would refuse to apologise for my behaviour because I kind of couldn't remember it. And I used to think it didn't count. And I lived with lovely people. I progressed through drugs and my using became really unmanageable when I got to London. I got a really good job. I was working in the buying department of a fashion company. And I was using heroin because I was so arrogant that I thought that I wouldn't get a habit and it wouldn't happen to me because I was too clever. And life was kind of great in London. And I remember I woke up with the flu, except it wasn't the flu. And I realised that I couldn't do without drugs. And I had to go to school to get to work. And the problem was on the outside, you know, I was very skinny and I had these fabulous free clothes. I was earning loads of money, but I couldn't afford my heroin addiction. I couldn't afford the bus fare to get to work. I couldn't afford my food. And I was kind of leading this double life. And I used to walk along Oxford Street and look at the homeless people and think, you're lucky. You know, I've got to kind of keep all these balls in the air and I've got to kind of keep all these people believing that I'm somebody I'm not. I've got to keep turning up to work. You know, what am I going to do? Who's going to kind of help me? And I'm not a person that asks for help because my arrogance tells me that I know everything and that I can solve all my problems myself. And as a result, it took me quite a long time to find this fellowship. So yes. Anyway, the drug, you know, the more drugs I used, the more crack I smoked, because I was smoking crack at this point. I gave up my job and I became totally unmanageable. You know, I sold everything that I had. I moved from London. I sold everything I had and I spent it on drugs. I moved back to Bristol and I smoked as much crack as I possibly could. Anyone that came in my path, I stole everything I possibly could. I abused my family. I moved in with my grandmother, who was 80 years old. I used to send her to get my methadone. I used to steal her money from under her bed to score. I used to threaten my father with a knife. And it just went on. Anyone who came into contact with me, I would abuse. I became very, very selfish and very devious. I'd lost all living skills. Nobody would use with me in the end because I didn't want to pay for my drugs. I wanted to take your drugs and then I wanted to take mine home and smoke them on my own. And it just became a very, very lonely existence. And what I used to try and do was, if I needed to go out and get money, I would dress up very nicely in all my free clothes, which I still had. I would put my lipstick on, I would put on my best voice, and I would pretend that I wasn't a heroin addict. And I would, you know, mix with people in circles in order to get more drugs. And, it, you know, it just proves to me I can be anyone that I want to be, you know, if there's something in it for me. And I ended up in a psychiatric hospital. I hadn't eaten for 6 months because I thought that people were trying to poison me. And I remember looking at my feet and there wasn't any fat on them at all. It was just like looking at a skeleton and I was dying. And I kind of knew I was dying. Nobody wanted anything to do with me at all. And I was kind of at the point where I knew that if I didn't do something about my using, I was going to die. And I didn't want to stop using. I just wanted everything to go away. I wanted people to like me. I wanted my family back. You know, I wanted not to feel so sick all of the time. And I went into a treatment centre. And the message of Narcotics Anonymous was carried to me in that treatment centre. I didn't believe what the treatment centre told me. I went there because I thought I could drink. You know, And basically, H and I came in, and I fancied very much the bloke that was taking the meeting. And he used to come back in every week, and I used to put my best leather trousers on, and I used to put red lipstick on, and I used to sit there and nod my head and identify with everything that he said, and imagine about how we were going to get married when I left treatment. And that was my introduction to Narcotics Anonymous. You know, and he told me which meetings he went to. So when I left treatment, I went to those meetings. I hated treatment. I was 25 when I went to treatment, and I'd been using for many years. I'd been using on my own, and I wasn't used to being told what to do. I wasn't ready to be told what to do. I wasn't ready to be challenged. I wasn't ready to have my defects of character pointed out to me when I was one day clean. And I stayed in that facility by the skin of my teeth, and I completed. But they told me they didn't want me ever to go back. And they said, "We know that you will use. We do not think you will stay clean." And I went back there last month, and I said, "I'm 10 years clean, and I've been going to Narcotics Anonymous." I went to Narcotics Anonymous the day that I left treatment, and they told me that I could stay clean, and they loved me until I could love myself. And I kept coming back, and it might have been petty to do that, and it may have been, you know, like... But it felt great. It felt great, and to be honest. Oh dear. When I first was clean in this fellowship, I got a sponsor straight away. That unfortunately happened to be the partner of the man that I fancied that carried the message to me. And I found this out pretty quickly, and I thought, shit, I'm never ever going to tell her that, because she'll kill me. And she really helped me. Because for me, I didn't just kind of come here and want to stop using drugs. I wanted to use drugs all of the time. You know, it had taken me such a long time to get clean, and once I was clean, all I could think about was using, was about drugs and, you know, and plotting ways. And sometimes I felt in the meetings that I was the only one that felt like this, you know, and nobody shared that they wanted to use, but I wanted to use all the time. But funnily enough, I didn't work the steps. I didn't work the steps because I kind of wanted a sponsor, you know, to kind of dump all my gear on, all my rubbish on. I kind of liked the meetings because I could flirt with people and I could, get prospective boyfriends one after the other. And being an addict, I didn't just have one boyfriend, I had quite a few. Basically, my desire to use coincided with me working step one. And I found myself in St. Paul's. You know, and I had £150 in my pocket, and I was going to score crack. And I sat in my car, and at that moment, it kind of came back to me what I'd heard in the meetings. You will go back to exactly where you came from. Using doesn't get any better. There is a solution. You do not have to use. And I sat there for about an hour, and then I just thought, fuck it, I'm just going to give this thing a go. And I phoned my sponsor in tears, and I said, I'm kind of ready to work the steps. Because I didn't want to go back to where I come from. You know, this fellowship has given me a life, because I didn't have a life before I came here. I didn't have any living skills. I didn't have any happiness. I wanted to die all of the time. I thought that drugs were the answer, but they weren't. They were killing me. And I started the process working through the steps. I did my step 12 today with my sponsor, and I think the first question was, describe what it's like to have a spiritual awakening. And for me, since coming to this fellowship and working the steps and having a sponsor and doing service, I have changed 100% from the person that walked in here one day clean. My thinking has changed, my behaviour has changed, My relationships have changed. I'm able to love. I'm able to love everybody in this room. I don't know you, but I can love you. I'm able to love my husband. I'm able to have a relationship with women. I'm able to be a mother to my son. You know, and everything that I have comes from in here. And that's kind of amazing. And this program is kind of amazing. And sometimes I say, I don't know how it works, but I do know how it works. It works through the 12 steps. It works through one addict helping another. It works through somebody sharing their experience with me. And if I have difficulties, then somebody identifies with me and shares a solution. Or if I'm just going fucking mad and I just don't know what to do, then some kind person will just listen to my fucking madness. I'm sorry, I shouldn't swear. Can't help it. And I kind of think of my recovery as like two parts. There's like years 1 to 5. And sometimes when I listen to people share that, like 3 years clean, and it seems like they have everything, you know, really together. And, you know, at 5 years clean, I was living with an addict who was smoking crack in my flat. And I'd come home and sometimes he'd hold me up at knife point. And I wasn't well at all. You know, my compulsive relationship seeking had led me to this place. And I was going to NA and I was working the steps, but it didn't seem, you know, I didn't seem to be able to match up my outside behaviours with the programme. This was before step 6, I might add. I started step 6, you know, my fifth year in recovery. It did all start to get a bit better then. And I think it's about having the humility, because I didn't come here very well. I came here just the same as I was, you know, with the drugs, and it took me a long time to recover. I haven't worked the steps very quickly. It took me 10 years to work the 12 steps. And I was just very insane. But I felt ashamed to share lots and lots of things because I wanted to appear, you know, oh, well, I'm 4 years clean and this is my idea of what it must be, what you must be like to be 4 years clean. And really, I felt really, you know, I still felt in a mess, to be honest. And I had to do a whole load of work, a whole load of step work again, you know, because that's where the answer lies. No matter what problems I have in my life, the answer is always the same. Go to more meetings, work another step, and share with your sponsor. You know, and whatever it is, it gets better, and that's been my experience. And after 5 years clean, you know, I kind of made a decision to follow direction, to that I wasn't perfect, and it was actually okay not to be perfect. It was okay to make mistakes. It was okay, because actually I've been through quite a lot in recovery. I've been through a lot in my using, but I've been through a lot in recovery, and actually it gives me more to share with other addicts, you know, my experience of getting myself out of trouble. And then there's the second half, which I think of my recovery, which I kind of work the program, you know, and things got a lot easier. And through stopping a lot of my damaging behaviours by working in step 6 and loving myself and treating myself with respect and treating others around me with respect, I started to really understand the meaning of love. And I met my husband. I met my husband in a treatment centre where I was a member of staff. And now we didn't get together in that treatment centre, but we got together when he was 3 months clean. And we're still married. We've been married for 3 years. We've been together for 5 years. And I really didn't believe I was capable of having a relationship with another human being. To be honest, I thought, well, it's just a bit of fun, really. Just for today. I used to think, I'll work the program in my relationship just for today. And just for today turned into quite a few days. And we got married. And the day of my wedding, I remember going to the hairdressers. We didn't invite anybody. I didn't even invite my mother, she went mad. Except for the night before, we phoned our parents and said, oh, we're getting married tomorrow, would you like to come? And on the morning of the wedding, I remember getting back and my husband wasn't dressed. And I said to him, why are you not dressed? We've got to get married in half an hour. He said, oh, I didn't think that you'd turn up. And there was him thinking that I wouldn't turn up, and I thought that he wouldn't turn up. And I love my husband. He's a really gentle man, and he's an addict. And the amazing thing is that we're able to have this relationship, because I know you hear about relationships between addicts and there's six people in the relationship, and there probably are six people in our relationship. Who he is, who he thinks he is, who I think he is. But what we've both got in our relationship is our sponsors. I don't have to dump all my stuff on my husband because I can talk to my sponsor about it. You know, and I think he does the same with his sponsor. We've had a son in recovery. That was a very, very painful thing for me. I didn't think I'd ever, you know, want children because of my childhood. I thought that as a mother, I would abandon my child. I wouldn't be able to look after my child. I wouldn't be able to have any feelings towards my child. And that it was better that if I just didn't have children. And my husband really wanted children. And when you're in a relationship, you kind of have to compromise. I don't like doing it too much, I have to admit. But, and we decided to have children. So I was in bits for the whole time that I was pregnant. And I thought, when I have this child, I'll be able to keep him or her clean. You know, I can take them places and they'll be dressed beautifully. But all the kind of love and stuff, then, you know, my kind of husband can do. And, you know, that will be as good as it gets for me. And I had my son. And I can't tell you, the moment that he was born, the love that I felt for him, it was a miracle. And I had this child, and he was like an angel. Because, one, I wasn't supposed to be alive. Two, my husband's not supposed to be alive. And yet we have this perfect child. And I think probably I learned about love through him. And I had my son when I was 8 years clean. And what I found out through the fellowship is that I'm not who I think that I am. I'm not as bad, I'm not as good or as bad as I think I am. And that I'm capable of doing and behaving things beyond my wildest dreams. When I was using, I couldn't do anything for another human being. All I could do was take. You know, since I've had my son, I love my son. I would walk to the ends of the earth for my son. I would do anything for him. You know, he is naughty. He draws on the walls of my flat, of our house. You know, he ruined my CD player by posting money into it. You know, every day there's near on disaster. But I just kind of love him, you know. And I just swore that I'm going to be the parent to him unlike my parents have been to me. You know, and that I will be there for him, and I will love him, and I will not criticize him, and I will try to let him grow through the principles of the 12 steps. And funnily enough, you know, when I came into treatment and came into recovery, my biggest resentment was with my mother. And through having my son, I've started to build a relationship with my mother. I've been through the 12-step process, you know. I've come to peace with the resentments that I felt with my mother. I've made amends to my mother for my behaviour to her, which was worse than her behaviour was to me. And since I had my son, she has been there for him. I have been able to allow them to have a relationship. And I feel that she's kind of making amends to me through my son. And I'm unselfish enough to be able to stand back and to allow that to happen with very strict boundaries, which my mother doesn't like. But it's not about my mother at the end of the day. You know, my responsibility is to kind of look after my son. Because when I was a teenager and I was allowed to stay out all night and take as many drugs as I possibly could, you know, I want things to be kind of different for my son. You know, he doesn't like the things that I tell him to do with me setting boundaries and me loving him and me trying to, you know, protect him. But that's kind of my job. And I'm not preaching to anybody. I'm just trying to share my experience of how it is for me. And it will be different from other people's experiences. And when, you know, and I've had really sad things happen in recovery as well. My grandmother, who I abused terribly in my using, you know, sending her out to get my methadone, taking her down to front lines when she was 80 with her money to pay for drugs, you know, with the belief that I wouldn't get stabbed if she was in the car next to me. And I smoked crack in her living room, you know, just. And we built up a really good relationship. I went to see her every week for 8 years, and she kind of got to know me clean. And in the beginning, she used to hide her handbag in the washing machine. She wouldn't let me in the house. You know, I remember being furious at 3 years clean. What do you mean you've hidden your handbag in the washing machine? You know, as if I was so righteous and so perfect. You know, when I spent the last 10 years taking every single penny that she had. And she used to say to me every week, you won't do that again, will you? And I used to say, well, I don't know whether I will use again, but today I'm not going to use. And I was able to make amends to her, not by saying sorry, because sorry, she'd heard sorry about 4 million times, you know, by kind of turning up. Anyway, she died. And that was one of the most painful things, because she was kind of like my mother. You know, and she was consistently there for me. And when she died, it was like I couldn't breathe. And I'd wake up in panic in the middle of the night. But I came to the fellowship and I kind of shared. I had to go to a meeting every day, not because I wanted to use, but because I didn't know how to deal with what I was feeling. And I was kind of loved and people identified with me. And I just kind of got through that grief process. And, you know, people shared with me about people that died within their family and how they stayed clean and how that I didn't need to use, and kind of a day at a time. But although it was very sad that she died, I felt incredibly proud that I had no regrets. And she knew that I loved her, and I knew that she loved me, and I knew that I'd been forgiven. And that was from the 12 steps. And 4 months ago, I had a miscarriage. And that was because it's, you know, I have these beliefs about how I will feel when things happen. And I thought, oh, you know, we want another baby. And I was pregnant and I didn't tell anybody. And it felt like God had given me another gift. And I was kind of, I had all this good stuff and I was keeping it to myself and I was so happy. And I kind of had this miscarriage, and it really felt like somebody had died. And I didn't want to go to meetings for the first time. I didn't want to tell anybody what had happened to me. I didn't want to describe the feelings of loss, because I thought if I started crying, then I might not stop. And I went to work the next day. I still work in bio. I still work in the same kind of job I did when I was using. I went to work the next day and it was a real relief not to have to talk about feelings and to kind of be able to kind of shut off from that. And I was talking to my sponsor and she kind of suggested that I go into the meeting and share, not because of for me, but it might inspire somebody else not to use. And I went to my home group and I shared. And the identification I got was amazing. You know, I might have been 10 years clean, but I had newcomers coming up to me and giving me their phone numbers and people phoning me to ask me how I was and, you know, telling me how they felt and how similar things had happened to them. You know, and I kind of knew that I wasn't alone, really. And I'm just grateful for that. I'm grateful to kind of so many people. So many people have died that I've shared my recovery with. But a lot of those people have, you know, they've helped me in order for me to stay clean. I think my time is up. I still feel quite nervous. It hasn't really got any better. But I'm, you know, all I can say is just keep coming back. Thanks for listening.